As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is Monday, best day of the week, not because we all have to start work again, but because Ari Wasserman is here. We have delving into Ari's beautiful mind about many different topics. We got some realignment topics. We got some recruiting stuff. We got some NIL stuff. Because this is going to be a Dear Andy and Ari episode. We're going to answer your questions to us. But also, there will be a random ranking at the end. We've left those out lately because there's been so much news to digest. But now we're going to talk about something we can digest. The random ranking will be best chain restaurant appetizers. And Ari, I know you're excited about that one.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, Andy, because I don't think I ever said this back to you, but Monday's the best day of the week.
You're kind of promo now. You're like, Hulk, let me tell you something, Mean Gene.
It is the best day of the week for me, too. I truly enjoy being on this podcast, and I am and thankful that you continue to let me be on it. And I think part of the reason why is because we're going to rank appetizers at chain restaurants?
Chain restaurant appetizers.
I don't know that there's anybody more qualified than me, let me tell you.
Well, and here's the best part, because I think this is only the two of us can make this rule for this ranking. We can't rank the bread. Like, Cheddar Bay biscuits are out because we've already ranked free restaurant bread. Like, we've already done that.
I've had a lot of road trips in Big Ten cities to know my fair share of, you know, I've been to Chili's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. So I've eaten my way through this country, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff there.
Who among us hasn't been to the Chili's that Mike Ditka built in Altoona, Pennsylvania? Come on.
There's been a lot of road trips that have allowed the experience and some pounds that came with it. But, you know, this is the fun of it. It's all about the experience.
Well, let's start out with some reader questions, because everybody's still trying to process all this realignment stuff. And really, so far, we only know two sure things. Oklahoma and Texas are moving to the SEC. The latest they can move is July 1st, 2025. We all suspect they're going to try to work a deal to move sooner, but we don't know much else. You know, if you're reading my story on Monday in The Athletic, then you know that the SEC is considering moving to a 9-game conference schedule to accommodate Texas and Oklahoma moving in and kind of changing things up so that there's more rotation through the league. Because you're not going to believe this, Ari, but a lot of those ADs would like Texas and Oklahoma to come to their stadium sooner than you know, once every 10 years.
Yeah, I think that there's a point to this madness, right? And you got to do something to make it work. But, man, I'm still kind of wrapping my mind around how this is real. I think everybody else is, too. But it'll certainly be a fascinating thing to watch. So I can't wait to see how it all pans out here. But I would bet a lot of money that's not going to be after 2025 or 2025. I think it's going to be sooner than that.
Yeah, I think so, too, because I think once you at the very latest that last year, you can just say, here's a dollar figure. Just pay this and be done with it. The eight that are left in the Big 12 aren't going to want to deal with Texas and Oklahoma. Texas and Oklahoma aren't going to want to deal with them. It's just let's write a check and be free of one another. I think that's what happens. I'm just not exactly sure when that happens. But there's another piece of this, and I took this question. The first question I'm going to ask is from Michael. Michael is not the only person who has asked it. It's been asked in several different ways. But I will tell you, I think it's the most common question I've gotten from readers since all this started. This, you know, some version of this question. So I'm gonna read it to you now. The conference realignment musical chairs have begun, and it's gotten me thinking. Previously and currently, realignment has been entirely focused on expansion, whether for cable footprint or brand value. But since it's become obvious that it really is about the money, who's the first to realize that they can make more money per school by contracting rather than expanding? I would imagine that there are several schools currently in autonomy conferences, that would be Power 5 right now, that add negligible value to the conference TV deal. The same total money split fewer ways means more money per school. When the musical chairs start up again in 5 to 10 years, who is on the chopping block? And I've gotten this, so Michael is asking this in a very clinical way. I've also gotten this from, like, say, a South Carolina fan saying, what's in this for us? You know, what? How do we do this? Because we already couldn't win, and now we really can't win. And then you have the people saying, well, how long till the SEC drops Vandy, or how long till the Big Ten drops Purdue, or whatever it is? And I don't really know how to answer that question, because I think if things continue the way they are, where there's a central governing body and there are conferences, if you're lucky enough to be in one of the blessed conferences, whether that's right now the SEC, the Big Ten, I think the ACC belongs on that list, probably the Pac-12, given the money they bring in, that you're probably okay. Like if you're Oregon State or you're Vanderbilt or you're Purdue or you're Wake Forest, you're okay, because you got lucky. You hung with the right people back in the day, or you joined at the right time. But I think, Ari, where it might get interesting, you heard Mark Emmert a few weeks ago talk about maybe instead of there being one big central governing body over all sports, that there are different governing bodies for different sports, like a football governing body and a basketball governing body and a baseball governing body, or just football splits off and everything else is its own thing because football is so different than everything else in terms of money. If that happened, if it's just a football governing body and you're trying to collect the best football teams in one league, then yes, I think conference affiliation being grandfathered in might not help you. But I think as long as there is a somewhat traditional conference structure, the Vandys of the world are fine. They're just not going to win.
Yeah, I was having this discussion with Landis, Bill Landis, on the Ohio State podcast, and I'm very curious to know your take on this too. Because when you look at this, and I listened to the last show that you did as well, breaking down television numbers, I sometimes wonder if the brand or the type of program that it seems like on the surface doesn't match how much it actually brings to the table from a viewership standpoint. Mm-hmm. So like we were talking about USC and the potential of them being in the Big Ten. But I wonder, for as USC brings to the table in terms of national powerhouse, quote unquote, I wonder if their viewership and their backing from a financial standpoint from the fans could measure up to a middle tier program in another Power 5 conference. Like in the discussion that we had was Oklahoma State. Does Oklahoma State have a more passionate fan base and a more reliable viewership than USC in LA? And maybe LA and USC is a million times bigger, but I do wonder a lot of times, like Iowa State, I think is a perfect example of this too, where they have a sneaky, passionate fan base that'll bring the TV numbers. So when you ask this question,
but they haven't brought the TV numbers. Did you read Stewart's story with the Big 12?
Yeah, no, in comparison to the bigger programs like Texas and Oklahoma in that conference, but and maybe Iowa State's a bad example, but I'm wondering too, it's like, what are the programs that came to your head when you read this question the first time? Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Wake Forest, like some of the teams at the bottom rung of the, you know, conference. But sometimes I wonder if we are missing the point on how big brands actually are in comparison to how much success or how they're perceived. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, but, well, I'll give you an example. So, Big 12 title game last year, Pac-12 title game last year. Oklahoma-Iowa State versus Oregon-USC. Who had more viewers, Ari? They were both on over-the-air networks. One was on Fox, one was on ABC. So equally capable, you know, you were equally capable of getting it. Probably the same number of people equally capable of getting
it. One was on a Thursday or Friday night, though, wasn't it?
One was a Friday night, and one was a Saturday noon game.
I'll say the Saturday noon game, Big 12.
Wrong. 1 million more viewers for the Pac-12 championship game.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Okay, 850,000 more viewers.
Because I just thought that the Oklahoma playoff implication would have skewed the numbers in that way. But at the same time, I wonder how much primetime Friday night being the only thing on television has an impact on that as well. And, you know, and maybe I'm wrong.
It might.
I don't know.
It might, but we can go back the following week or the previous week. And, you know, this is a fairly normal week. But this is also the week Army-Navy was on. Army-Navy, by the way, does a huge number. So if you're wondering about the American and who the most valuable team in the American might be, Navy's up there because of the Army-Navy game. Last year's Army-Navy game had 4.91 million viewers. And that's not even in a normal, like in a normal season, it's a much higher viewership because it's the only game on the Saturday the Heisman gets given out. But I will say, so that was the weekend of LSU-Florida. LSU-Florida was the next highest rated game at 4.6 million. The next one was UNC-Miami, which was two pretty good teams, but North Carolina crushed them, 3.33 million. The next game, USC-UCLA at 3.24 million. All right, I got a feeling people like watching USC.
Yeah. And I was afraid when I went down this road that USC is a bad example because USC is a brand name. I'm just trying to come up with a fan base that might not seem like it has big viewership numbers based on the program stature, but actually are more valuable than a brand name. Do you see what I mean by that?
It's
like which sneaky teams are good.
The problem is those small passionate fan bases are great, but they're small. And this is if Clemson hadn't become a national power, like a team that can win the national title, it would fall into that group too. That's not a huge fan base. Now, everybody wants to watch them because they might win the national title and they have a bunch of guys that are going to get picked in the NFL draft. But if they were not, let's say they were just an above average ACC team, they wouldn't get that kind of pop either just because the number of people watching them is just not, they don't have as many fans. As like Ohio State, we all know, huge fan base. But those Big Ten schools have massive alumni bases. So even if we're talking about Wisconsin, Illinois has a huge alumni base. That's a giant school.
But does Illinois drive television numbers? Because this question basically is which teams have the crappiest numbers on TV?
No, they don't. Illinois does not drive television numbers. They don't. But Iowa does. I mean, Iowa does all right. So yeah. I think it's one of those things where you either have to be kind of a national contender type or have just this massive following. So I think those are who we're looking at. I mean, prime example, Oklahoma State Baylor on ESPN at 3:30 p.m. on December 12th last year, 1.03 million viewers. Minnesota Nebraska on Fox Sports 1, which is not carried in nearly as many places, at noon, in a worst time slot, 1.05 million.
Yeah.
So Nebraska. It's Nebraska. That's people watching Nebraska. People going and finding Nebraska. So
which teams jump out to you then in this question? Because like I could come up with a few here.
The ones they're talking about. They're talking about Vanderbilt. They're talking about Purdue. They're talking about Wake Forest. They're talking about Oregon State. I'd say Syracuse too. Now Syracuse has basketball value. I'm rethinking Kansas, by the way.
I was going to ask you about Kansas.
Can I take a mulligan on Kansas? And here's why. Because I still think being able to win the basketball national title is very meaningful. And that is where Baylor comes into this too, the defending national champions in men's basketball. That is very important to a conference because everybody watches March Madness, everybody in the country. So your conference can be front and center for 3 weeks of the year. That's valuable real estate, valuable advertising, valuable everything. So maybe the basketball piece of it helps you if you have a national title contending type team. So Baylor obviously has one. Kansas obviously has one.
UCLA now, has one.
Yeah. For usually. Kansas's purposes, though, like, I wonder, like, if Kansas was an average football program, would they be a no-brainer pickup for someone like the Big Ten?
Right. And also, we've talked about this a lot of times, too. Kansas can be. I think they can be.
Won the Orange Bowl after the 07 season.
So, like, when you make these decisions, too, I also think that we have to take into account which programs are hopeless. And I don't know that there's a lot of programs that are, like, I don't know. Is Syracuse hopeless?
I don't know if they're hopeless. It's hard. I don't want to call anybody hopeless because I don't think any situation is hopeless. I think you get the right coach in place and you can win anywhere. But it's much harder to win in a place like Syracuse when, you know.
I just think Syracuse is just, the odds are stacked against them big time.
You've got to fly those players past a lot better football programs to even get them on a visit.
There's a Wegmans there, though.
There is a Wegmans. That's true. And they got the dinosaur barbecue. There's a place called Possibilities. I haven't been there, but a lot of the folks I know who covered stuff there just rave about it. So
Possibilities.
I'm
getting in my car right now. So basically the question is asking Andy, which I've driven through Syracuse many times. Which teams in the Power Five, as it currently stands right now, just have the worst TV numbers for their regular on average team?
Well, and it's also would a conference shuck some out? Let's say the SEC had a chance to add Florida State and Clemson, which right now we don't know what the ACC's grant of rights is. If it holds, then nobody's adding anybody from the ACC. But let's say hypothetically the SEC had a chance, would they ditch Vanderbilt and somebody else to do that? And I don't think they would. I don't.
I also read the question as like, would the Big Ten just dump Illinois?
Yeah. I don't think they would.
Bigger piece of the pie. You don't need to get bigger, just get smaller.
Yeah, you could drop. Could you drop Illinois and Purdue?
Illinois off the bottom, because everybody gets paid more, and they're not bringing. It's because there's a lot of teams that are in the right place at the right time that are rolling in Big Ten money right now. That, I mean, before Rutgers hired Schiano, they were rolling around in Big Ten money, and I don't know if they were having the impact that the previous expansion viewed that they would.
Oh, I think they did, because they automatically jacked up what you could charge for the Big Ten network and the footprint. That's all it was. That was adding to the footprint. But now that everybody's cutting the cord, you don't...
That's what I'm saying.
That's not how you would add. But so they got a bunch of money from them already. Like, adding Rutgers and Maryland already made them a bunch of money.
Yeah, yeah. Moving forward, obviously, this has become a ruthless situation. And it's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately situation. And I understand that Rutgers and Maryland made financial sense for the Big Ten when it expanded. But if they were the Rutgers and Maryland that joined the Big Ten and what they were for the five, six first years that they were there, that isn't much value moving forward in a time where people aren't paying for cable anymore.
Yeah.
So you can cut them right now, regardless of how much money they made before, spread around the pie to the rest of the Big Ten and then take, you know, two teams out of it. I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, Rutgers' entire.
I don't think they'd do it. I just don't think that you're right.
Why? Because they have Harvard all of a sudden?
You would be adding, with the Big Ten, especially after the new TV deals, that would, slicing off two teams. Now, here, you probably don't make as much, because part of it's not just raw numbers, it's also inventory. So if you sliced off two teams, then that's, you know, what, 12 home games worth of inventory that's gone, and more than that, because some of those are conference games. So that's a lot of inventory you're slicing off, too. So that counts, too, and the network's going to not pay for that. So, but yes, you're right. I mean, if you slice off two from the bottom in the Big Ten, that's probably $100 million that you could spread around to everybody else. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Who's on the chopping block if this were to ever happen? And I guess you could go conference by conference and name two, right? Would it be Wake Forest and Syracuse in the ACC, Illinois, Washington's, Purdue in the Big Ten?
Washington State and Oregon State in the Pac-12.
SEC would be Vandy and...
Mississippi State,
yeah.
I mean, I just don't think they would do it. I really don't. I think they would have a hard time. Think about this. The last time we saw somebody get booted, now we saw Idaho and New Mexico State get booted out of the Sun Belt, but that was just kind of a shotgun marriage anyway. The last time we saw any longstanding member tossed from a conference for not performing the way they were supposed to was Temple getting kicked out of the Big East in 2004. I mean, that's a long time, and that only happened once.
So these teams that we just mentioned, though, basically were smart investors.
They were. Yes, they got in on the ground floor. They got in at the right time. We mentioned Syracuse. Syracuse is a newbie in the ACC, but they were necessary when the ACC grabbed them because that was playing offense to play defense.
Let me throw another curveball at you. I've heard a lot, you know, as a bystander about academics and how it plays a role in expansion and how important they are. But if you made a conference out of Duke, Wake Forest, Northwestern, and Vanderbilt, and Stanford, and a few other ones, maybe throw a few private schools in there. Baylor is a private school. Is that something that could happen, or are these academic institutions important? And like, I'm curious to know what your thought is on this because.
But it depends.
Are we
on
at a point now
asking.
Where academics don't really matter?
If you're asking an athletic director, they don't really care. If you're asking a university president, many of them do care quite a bit. They care about who they associate with. So, like, that's why when I suggested the Big Ten take part of the Pac-12. One reason why I suggested Cal and Stanford would be part of that mix is if you're the presidents of Michigan and Michigan State and Wisconsin and Penn State, and you view your group as kind of one notch below the Ivy League, and you have a chance to add Cal and Stanford to your group, you do it. Like, you don't care what their record's been on the football field. You add them. But then if you're Ohio State, who obviously very good school, but looks at football in the way that most of the SEC schools look at football, you're going to go, okay, guys, I get that. Can we please have USC and Washington and Oregon, please? Like, those are the ones that are going to help us out here.
Yeah, because I wonder, too, if there's a, and this might be completely wrong, is there a correlation between academia and viewing football as less important because of the academic nature and the alumni's likelihood of watching football on TV on Saturdays?
No, but I will say there's probably a correlation between public and private, large and small. So USC is a private school, but it's a big private school. It has a big student body for a private school. Wake Forest is a tiny student body. Miami is a tiny student body. And in Miami's case, the student body comes from everywhere. They're not all from Miami. It has a huge international population, many of whom have never heard of American football when they get on campus or have never watched it. So, yeah, a large land-grant state university with a huge student population is much more likely to have a large, passionate fan base that watches on TV. Like, that's just common sense.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, Duke is not made up of a bunch of kids who grew up in North Carolina who grew up rooting for Duke. It's made up of people from all over the country who are smart enough to get into Duke.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems to me that the smarter the school, the less interest in football there would be across the board, regardless of student makeup. And I don't know if that's just a dumb way of putting it, but
you're saying they have better things to do, Ari?
Yeah, like make money and be really smart and have important
create
jobs.
Companies and yes,
yeah, yeah, invest and roll around in their money. I don't know.
You're not wrong.
I think that going to certain schools, going to that school, the football program has done a huge part in the addition of just general admission. Where being a football fan of that program is every bit ingrained as the reasoning for going to that school is their academics are.
I'll give you one where football actually increased the academic stature of the school. No. Well, that increased the money flowing into the school.
Money fund, increased
that increased the out-of-state applications. No, Notre Dame. This is why one of the reasons Notre Dame cherishes its independence. So let's back up and we'll do the Notre Dame history lesson again. Fielding Yost, head coach slash AD at Michigan, blackballs Notre Dame. Says no team in the Western Conference, which is the proto Big Ten, no team's going to schedule you guys. You can't play in the Midwest. Got to go. Whatever. I don't care what happens to you, but you can't stay here. So Notre Dame goes east to play Army, starts going west to play USC, goes all around the country. Goes from being a sleepy Catholic school in South Bend, Indiana, to being one of the most, to being probably the most famous Catholic school in the country. And that increases the number and the quality of applications. It increases the quality of student. So, yes, in that case, football helped Notre Dame become an elite academic institution.
And being a football fan at Notre Dame is more ingrained in your identity as a Notre Dame student than it is for a Northwestern student.
Correct. It's part of why you went. It's one of the things you were – when you filled out your application at Notre Dame, probably you were excited about the prospect of going to football games at Notre Dame.
Right.
Like when you're filling out your application to Northwestern, and we know a lot of Northwestern grads, they wanted to get into the J school. They wanted to get into Medill. Like they didn't care about the football team.
Yeah, I know. Well, now they do. Every sports writer in America that went to Northwestern is a big Northwestern fan. But
And Stanford, I think, took this and it was a crutch before, and Stanford turned it into an advantage where and I think part of this, and you and I have talked about this, part of this is recruits, players have just, they've gotten smarter about this whole thing. They've started to look a little bit beyond the 4 years in college and toward the next 60 years of life after college. And so there are a lot more players now who will take a Stanford offer very seriously or will make the Stanford offer their ultimate goal, even if they can get an Ohio State offer or an Alabama offer or a Texas offer or a USC offer, because they just want a free education at Stanford, which I got to say is a very mature way to look at things.
Yeah. And a pretty solid football program at times.
It's become that way because I think Jim Harbaugh did a good job establishing that. And then David Shaw did a great job building upon that. Now, can they keep doing it? We'll find out because they've slipped a little bit, but
It makes me feel like every single academic institution, all the ones that we just named, should also be better at football because of that.
I don't know that there's that big of a group among the elite players. But Stanford is the only one where the education is considered on par with the Ivy League, but you are playing Power 5 football. Now, Cal's close. Obviously, Virginia, Michigan, these are great schools that we're talking about. And they're viewed very, very highly. Those degrees are considered extremely valuable. But Stanford is the one that if you have a Harvard grad and a Stanford grad, you're like, oh, okay, sounds good. These guys both seem pretty good.
You're a high-tier three-star prospect in Indiana, mm-hmm. and you are down to Iowa, Maryland, Michigan State, and Northwestern. Wouldn't Northwestern, who plays in the same conference, be the best choice for your son?
Well, especially when you see Rashawn Slater going in the first round out of Northwestern, because that's sort of the final piece of the puzzle is can you produce the draft picks too? Because otherwise you might look at it and say, well, Iowa's produced more draft picks than these, or Michigan State's produced more draft picks. But now that Northwestern's also producing the draft picks, I don't think there's a question which one you'd pick.
Michigan State went to the playoff. Mm-hmm. I feel nuts thinking that the ceiling should be higher at Northwestern.
I don't think it's that easy. Plus, remember, there's a larger group of... There's a larger group that the other schools can fish from. It's a bigger pond for the other schools to fish from. Because remember, some of those guys that can get into Northwestern still want to go to Iowa or Michigan State, or still want to go to Michigan or Ohio State. So they're out. And then now Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, those schools can dip into the deeper pool. Once that one guy's out of your pool in Northwestern, you're looking at a much smaller group. So that's the only issue. All right, let's move on to this next question. This is from Michael. This is from Rick. This is one that we got a pretty good answer to last week, thanks to an interview that somebody did. One thing that has become very clear these past few days is that football really is the king of college revenue sports. How big is the gap between football and basketball, and has it always been this big? So John Skipper, who used to run ESPN, now runs DAZN, he was on with Dan Le Batard last week, and he said football is essentially 80% of the revenue. 80 to 85% of the revenue. That the other sports, because men's basketball would be the bulk of the rest of it, but in some places, like in the SEC, baseball makes some money. In some places, women's basketball makes money. Some places, softball might make money. But it is, by and large, football. It is the train, the engine that drives everything. And I was glad that Skipper, I'm glad Skipper's out of ESPN and can say this stuff now, because this is what I would try to tell people, because they never let us see these contracts, but you talk to enough commissioners and TV consultants and all that, you kind of get a feeling for it. So the number I'd always been told was about 85%. And so Skipper saying it's somewhere 80 to 85, that sounds very good, very right. And he'd be the guy who's setting the market. So I know people who are not huge football fans, which is probably not people listening to this podcast, but they don't want to hear it. But football pays for everything. It really does.
Those Olympics that everybody's enjoying watching right now?
What's that?
The Olympics that everybody's enjoying?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can thank all those unpaid football players for doing that.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Those non-revenue Olympic sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. All, and they go to schools who have programs like rifle and swimming and all the things that you're watching on television right now. And all of those programs and those trainings that those Olympic sports and athletes went to was funded by football programs.
For the most part, yes. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was in college, this is when I was the sports editor at the student newspaper. I was not on the football team anymore. We were covering a football scrimmage one night. And one of the sports information interns sat down next to me, and he was very upset. And he said, "What do my swimmers have to do to get more written about them in the newspaper?" And I said, "You can tell them to play football." And he did not like that answer. And I said, "Well, that's what people want to read about. I'm sorry." And he's like, "But shouldn't it be covered equally?"
Read the room, Andy.
No. I'm like, we're sitting in an 85,000 seat stadium. How many does the natatorium seat over there?
Yeah, it's the Athletic is a business, and the business is covering what people want to read about and what they care about. And there are certain sports
and people
that
care about swimming for 4 days every 4 years.
Yeah, and it was funny because I was my pal over at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, Doug Glamorese, made this point. And I thought it was a really, really good point. He said that all of these Olympic rosters are being sent out from the schools. It's like a press release. USC's got 97 people competing in the Olympics.
If USC was a country, yes.
Yeah. And the funniest thing about it, and I never really put these two things together until he said it, but they are producing athletes who are competing for other countries off the backbone of college football.
Correct.
Because
you're welcome, Belarus.
USC, Yeah, and USC has 195 or 30,000 people competing in the Olympics, and only like half of them are competing for America. So USC's football program, which funded the entire, is like the reason why Greece has a swimming team.
Yeah. So when in doubt, thank a football player. That's generally the rule that you should go by. And
I think this is a good segue into the next question where we can talk about people going to get that bag, because this is why go get that bag, young man.
Exactly right. Okay. So this is a question from Robert, and this was to your mailbag, Ari. And it's about Quinn Ewers, the greatest mullet in the class of 2022. He's also possibly the best quarterback in the class of 2022, but he might not be in the class of 2022. He might be in the class of 2021. He may be enrolling at Ohio State shortly, and I guess taking a redshirt year, so he can sign some NIL deals. So here's the question from Robert. Quinn Ewers reclassifying in 2021 and enrolling this fall seems like it would be a completely unnecessary move and create drama and tension that the Ohio State program and QB room could certainly do without. Would Ohio State risk losing him if they express their desire that he stay in high school? Waiting until January doesn't seem like a big ask. Okay, so here Robert didn't have the backstory in here. The reason Quinn Ewers might leave is because he's being offered money to endorse products, except the state of Texas, the high school association in Texas, does not allow high school players to endorse products, to take money to endorse products.
Dumb.
So if he couldn't do that, he may just not play, and all he has to do is take one online class, pass it, he can enroll at Ohio State. He'd be a freshman right now. This is the stupidest discussion in the whole world. Because if you're Texas, just get rid of the rule. Because don't yell at this kid.
And it's going to happen. It's going to change.
Don't yell at this kid for not, like, you're pushing him away. If you'd like him to play, if you'd like your best players to stay in the state and play, then just let them get the money. What difference does it make?
It's a progression. And I think we talked about this on this podcast. But everybody can agree universally, or at least 95%, that the NCAA rule prohibiting people from benefiting from their name, image, and likeness was dumb. Which is why they changed the rule, right?
Correct.
But they changed the college rule. And I know that in some states, the law has also been applied to high school athletes, but in some states it hasn't.
And or I some think states, the law expressly forbids high school athletes from getting, which is even stupider.
And
just let
I think Florida
everybody
is one
get
of them
paid.
Too, right?
Yes.
Florida let and Texas are the paid. Two most densely populated states in the entire country for high school football talent. And we are telling people how they cannot make money. And I think that's the least American thing on the face of the earth. Now, here's another thing that's really, really funny. So as I'm putting together stuff in this nursery, I heard from another mom that's a friend with my fiance that they have these toddlers. I'm talking 3, 4, 5-year-old kids on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
reviewing toys.
Oh yeah,
and that these 100%. And these
my kids
videos,
used to watch those kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those kids who don't have the toy would sound terrible. Be a better dad, Andy. But you know they are watching these videos. And these videos are amassing millions and millions of views, and these five-year-old kids are making $1 million a year reviewing toys.
Correct.
And they are allowed to make money, but you're telling me that a high school athlete can't? And listen, Quinn Ewers is 18. He's an illegal man.
He's an adult.
So we could call these prospects kids, and I think I say that more than I should because a lot of times they're not. And to me, if he wants to get paid now, anybody who says, well, can he just wait 4 more months? It's not a big ask. I don't know. Can you wait 4 more months for your check?
Yeah. I mean, shoot, if I were state of Arkansas, I'd be like, we're going to let you do it. Hey, Quinn, want to come play here?
You want to come play here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I called some people and I wrote a column about this. And I don't know if you read it, Andy, but I wanted to know because Pete Thamel, who broke the story, said that he could be approaching seven figures or $1 million endorsement revenue for income per year. And he has, based on his current profile, and I think part of it with Quinn too is he's got the bleached mullet. He is a quarterback. He's in Texas. He's in Dallas suburbs.
He's going to Ohio State.
Very marketable human being in general. But if he were to go into college football right now, according to the people that I spoke to about this, the experts in NIL, he would be the 25th most marketable player in the country. And if he's the based on his current followings on Instagram and Twitter and his profile. And that's not even playing a down.
Yep.
So with his followings, which I think is 83,000 Instagram followers, might be more now since when I wrote this, and 23,000 Twitter followers, he could have sponsorships where each Instagram post is worth $2,500. And it's like, I don't know, I'm about to have a kid. I'd like to make $2,500 making a post. Or I'd like to make, you know, $500 for tweeting something. And it's just like, yeah, I guess in hindsight, or in when you're removed from it, you can say, hey, well, what's another 4 months? He's enrolling early in January, and he'll get paid then. It's just like,
yeah. What
do you know?
What
like the level of arrogance
explodes this year. What if his knee explodes during a high school game this year?
The level of arrogance of telling somebody to wait for their money is so aggravating to me. And I don't mean to be like. And I understand the concept of a fan. What's another 4 months? It's actually not that long of a time. It goes in the snap of a finger. But 4 months is almost half of a year of a seven-figure potential.
Also. Income. Something can happen that could cause him to not make any of that in the future. So get it now when you can.
Everybody should get their bag the second they can get it. That is the American dream. And just because he plays high school football in Texas, I find this to be admirable. And you know what? I think the original question was about Ohio State's quarterback room. Listen, Ohio State
guys don't care. They came to play quarterback at Ohio State. They understand another five-star showing up.
I also think, too, that if you asked Ryan Day in an honest moment, do you want this to happen, he would say no. Because this isn't ideal for the way that his quarterback room is set up for the future. But he is too damn good at football to let him walk anywhere else. And you do whatever he wants to do. And if Quinn Ewers wants to make an example of the system, he will be the reason why Texas changes that stupid rule.
100%. It's silly. Whatever argument you have against it, I promise you it's stupid. Like, just stop. Just say, oh, they're high schoolers. No, it doesn't matter if they're high schoolers.
Five-year-olds American citizens make millions. Yeah.
Who someone is offering money to. Nothing wrong with that. If someone offers money to you, I'm not going to be like, no, don't take it. As long as
I would take money to do anything.
If they're offering money to you for something that isn't illegal, like against, I don't mean against the stupid Texas High School State Association rules, for something that isn't against the law where you are, then I don't care if you take it.
Because we've been
trained. And you shouldn't care if someone else takes it.
As football fans, to take these NCAA rules and view them as if they're breaking the law.
Correct. Or more serious than actually breaking the law.
And you make it, you build this thing up into your brain of like, wow, you're a terrible person if you accept money. It's like, no, you know what? From now on, if somebody wants to give you money, then you should probably just be able to take it.
Exactly. And the thing is, you say, well, what if he decides to go somewhere else? What if he decides, you know, he's at Ohio State and he doesn't like it and he goes somewhere else? Who cares? Whoever gave him the money, if they're an Ohio State fan and that's why they gave him the money, well, tough nuggies.
Yeah. I bought stocks that have gone down 50%. Yeah. I'm an asshole.
You took the risk. You took the risk. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. And it's like, he doesn't owe Ohio State anything. No. It's his name, Ohio's, image, and likeness.
Ohio State is rolling the dice on Quinn Ewers thanks to very good evaluation skills on Ryan Day's part, which I trust pretty highly.
Anybody could evaluate this one. Yeah.
I know. But if Ryan Day says, this is the guy I want, I got a feeling he's probably a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, and actually, Ohio State will make infinitely more money off of Quinn Ewers' talents if he makes it to the starting quarterback position at some point than they would from losing all the people who transfers and more than Quinn Ewers will make. So it's just like at a certain point, it's just going to become annoying to have to talk about this stuff. And like, I know that it's still
it's going to normalize. I'm telling you,
it's going to. Normalize. Oh, of course it will. And these types of rules that are currently in place that are creating these discussion points are going to be changed because they're dumb. It's the reason why, and it might have taken, what, decades longer than it should have? The Olympic model changed, didn't they, at a certain point? It changes because you can't tell people not to make money.
And I don't know. I think having the dream team in the Olympics probably made the Olympics more money in TV revenue. Probably allowed them to sell their TV rights for more money. So this is not hurting anyone. No one is hurt by this. And you could say, well, what if somebody offers him money to go to a different high school? Are you mean there's recruiting at the high school level in Texas and Florida? Oh my stars. Really? Oh no, wait, that's been going on for 100 years. Who cares? Stop.
Yeah. Set a certain
stop
point,
clutching
just like-
your pearls. Stop making stupid rules. If you have a stupid rule and it's going to cost you the best quarterback in the state, get rid of the stupid rule and keep the quarterback. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we have a much more lively topic here, if it's possible, because now we're on to our
I'm ready to get mad. And I'm ready to get mad, Andy.
I don't know that I'll get mad. I think you're going to have some that I'm going to go, oh, I can't believe I didn't think of that, or I've got to try that, because I think you have a lot more recent experience than I do with the chains, because a lot of the – when I was writing that column where I would review a place every week, I was always having to go try to something new, something different. So a lot of my chain experience is back in the day experience, although there's some that I still, you know, every once in a while I'll hit up. Now, I'll reiterate the rules here. Free restaurant bread is not something we can talk about here because Ari and I have already ranked that. I wish I remembered the date. I would tell you which episode to go listen to because that's a good one too. But these are chain restaurant appetizers. They must cost money. They cannot be the free bread. And Ari, the floor is yours.
It's all restaurants. So you don't have to go in and sit. If it's a chain restaurant that you can have delivered, it counts too, is my understanding.
Well, I mean, and also, I mean, just the way things have changed, especially during the pandemic, the places you would sit, now you're having delivered quite a bit anyway. So
yeah,
the lines are very blurred right now. So okay. Ari?
Starting down from 5.
Yep, number 5 for you.
Applebee's Brew Pub Pretzels and Beer Cheese.
I this one was close for me. This because I do love a good soft pretzel, dipping in beer cheese. Yeah, I like these a lot. This was an honorable mention for me. Buffalo Wild Wings used to have a good soft pretzel. They've recently changed their pretzel appetizer. It's not as good now. So the Applebee's ones are very solid though.
I always ask for extra salt on them because like the salt.
I scrape the salt off and dip it in more mustard or more beer cheese.
And I also ask for honey mustard as a dipping sauce, which might make
that's
me
a good
weird.
Choice. No, that's a good choice. I think that's a fine choice. And mustard and pretzels go well together, but you want to sweeten it up a little bit. But I do like the beer cheese. The beer cheese is a great pretzel dip. And
maybe this will be another random ranking one day, but best dipping sauces we've never done.
100%. We got to do something next week then. Best dipping sauces next week.
Mark Cuban chip with the pen.
Write it down. I know what's not making my list, so that's easy.
Thousand Island. Okay, what's your number 5?
Nothing mayo Ford. My number 5 is Chili's skillet queso. That's your beef queso at Chili's. Their chips and salsa are really good anyway. Chips and salsa are free in the bar at Chili's. They're not free if you're sitting at a table at Chili's, which I always kind of blew my mind, but I understand they're trying to get you to buy more beer in the bar. But you do have to pay extra, obviously, if you want the skillet queso, but man, that is a delicious, on that gooey cheese with beef in it, dripping off your chip. Oh, it's tremendous.
The Chili's chips are super thin, and I find there to be nothing more aggravating than dipping into a cheese or a sauce with a chip that breaks.
Mm. So if you get that, if you have a thin chip, now some they're not all that thin. Some of them hold up. But if you feel like they're doing that, you can spoon it onto your chip, and the chip will hold up.
Be a man.
Too much work.
Let it break in there.
Oh, I don't care if it breaks in there, but I lose my chip. I don't want a smaller bite. I want the right size bite, so I'll spoon it on there.
I just find it to be aggravating generally. So my favorite tortilla chips are thicker.
Number four for you.
Cheesecake Factory fried macaroni and cheese.
I thought about this one too. For what that is, it should be better. Like, it's fried mac and cheese.
I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing. Because like I'm gonna blow the rest of my list right now, but there's nothing great or better than a really good mozzarella stick, and I don't have a mozzarella stick on my list.
There's
I couldn't think of the signature mozz stick.
There is no good mozzarella stick because there is it's too hard to get to the right point in time to eat them because they are either too molten and will burn your tongue. Or they are just string cheese in a fried shell. So you have
Listen, you're crazy if you're not into a 15 second window.
You have a 15 second window to have a perfect mozzarella stick, and you're never going to hit it perfectly.
There are places that have fried cheese, like upscale restaurants where you can eat it with a fork, that I think would probably make my list, but I couldn't come up with the, because this is specific. If you were to have a list that was just appetizers, mozzarella stick might be number one for me. But I couldn't come up with one mozzarella stick that I thought was greatly superior to everything else.
Nobody makes a good one because you can't make a good
one. I think it's insanity if you don't like mozzarella sticks in general. Like if you're like an anti-mozzarella stick person, which it sounds like you kind of are. Like
I just eat string cheese.
String cheese isn't deep fried and melted. What are you talking about?
It's not melted after a few minutes. And if you eat it too soon after it's melted, you burn your tongue.
You know you're going to have to go in public tomorrow and face people, right? Like, people are going to listen to this.
I'm not worried. They're going to throw mozzarella sticks at me? Oh, no.
I love this podcast so much. And I love learning new things about you. But sometimes I learn new things about you and it makes me cringe. And not liking mozzarella sticks is one of them. Okay,
I'm not ordering them when I have better options. Okay. They never turn out to be what you want them to be. Never. Not once. All right. Number four for me. Bonefish Grill Bang Bang Shrimp.
That was one on my list. But I haven't been to Bonefish Grill in a long time. The Bang Bang Shrimp is kind of like, it's fried a little bit, right? It's lightly fried and it's got a sweet sauce on it.
It's in a spicy sweet sauce.
Yeah.
It's just a great... Let's get going. Let's eat. They got that sourdough bread, and because your main course at Bonefish Grill is probably not going to be very heavy, you know, it's probably going to be a piece of grilled fish or something, and you may even go vegetables with it. You might go mashed potatoes, but you're not going to eat a particularly heavy meal there. So get something that is a little bit heavy to start off with.
Yeah, I haven't had that in a really long time, but I have had it before, and I considered putting it on there. But it just, listen, when you go to a chain restaurant like these, you're going there to be a fat person. So a lot of the things on mine are just like, how fat can you possibly be? And I know that fried shrimp is probably pretty high on the fat scale, but
it's up there.
When I'm in, it's smash season in these places. I want to smash food. And little shrimps that you have to eat with your fork, they're not hardy enough to leave. I want to leave so that I'm afraid that I'm going to fall asleep at the steering wheel on my way out. That's what I want to feel when I go to these places.
Do you even have one of these that you eat with a utensil? Is this all? You have to eat all of yours with your hands.
My next one's a utensil.
Oh, okay. All right. Do tell.
Olive Garden Lasagna Fritta.
Okay. I've never had these.
Are you crazy?
I saw these. Yes. Listen, when I was going to Olive Garden, I was broke. So it was unlimited soup, salad, and breadsticks for me, unless it was never-ending pasta bowl season. So I didn't have money to buy appetizers, but I've looked at these things. When I was going through my list today, making sure I didn't miss anything, that was on everybody's list. And I was like, oh my God, next time I'm at Olive Garden, I have to try this.
Listen, one time I went with another friend, of mine that likes to eat as much as I did, and we racked up like a $110 bill at Olive Garden.
That's tremendous.
Do you know how hard that is with the breadsticks
yes, I do,
being
because,
free?
So Barrett Salee and I have a segment. When we did a Sunday morning radio show together on Sirius XM for about 2 years, and we had a segment called Eat Your Feelings. And it was based on, do you remember during the FBI investigation into basketball, there was an agent runner, Christian Dawkins, who had
yes.
turned in a bunch of receipts, and they found his receipts. So he had a receipt from Longhorn Steakhouse for like $133. And
good for him.
It was a Duke player's parent, or a guy who ended up signing with Duke. His parents had met with him, and the parents were interviewed, and they said, "Oh, we just got water. We didn't order anything." And so, if they're telling the truth, this guy spent $133 by himself at a Longhorn Steakhouse. So we got the menu of Longhorn Steakhouse and figured out how you would do that
if and you then, did it alone.
Yeah, and then we created a segment every week where whoever had the worst week in college sports. We went to a local restaurant and tried to spend $100. We did it for the last time we had a show together a few weeks ago. We did it for Mark Emmert at the Steak and Shake in downtown Indy. Do you know how hard it is to spend $100 at Steak and Shake? Like you are dying. I had like six milkshakes and eight burgers. And
I mean, a sit down restaurant, you can get there because Olive Garden it used to be super cheap, but it's not that cheap anymore. It's not a nice Italian restaurant, but it's not the cheapest place. Unless you go in at lunch and get salad and breadsticks.
I do need to try these. These are fried ravioli squares, essentially.
Right. Yes.
And it's not like the St. Louis toasted ravioli. Or I'm sorry, fried lasagna. Fried lasagna yes. squares. Yes.
It's lasagna, you know, the thick pasta sheet that you would find in lasagna, fried and folded with marinara sauce on it and cheese.
That sounds amazing. I'm gonna have to try that. That sounds awesome. So my number three, this is the last one was something a little heavier. Because your main course is going to be lighter. This is a little bit lighter appetizer because your entree is going to be heavier. And that is the P.F. Chang's chicken lettuce wraps. Now, the problem with these is they're a little too light. And sometimes I might need two orders of them before we even get to the entrees.
I'm anti-P.F. Chang's. You know
what
this.
What do P.F. Chang's ever do? Well, yes. I understand Payway is just as good, if not better. Their pad thai is actually better.
It's literally better.
and quite a bit cheaper, and it's the same company. I get it. I understand. Okay, well, if it'll make you feel better, Payway lettuce wraps, because they also have the same lettuce wraps.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had them before, but I know that people really, really like them, but I just like don't think I'll ever go to P.F. Chang's ever again.
But you're going to go to Payway, so just get them at Payway.
Yeah, I haven't been to Payway in a long time either. There's not that many in Dallas. I don't think there might not be. I don't think I've seen one since I moved to Dallas. Didn't they really subtract how many or close down a ton of the locations?
I don't know. I see. I've never lived in Payway territory. There are Payways within a couple hours of me. There's Payway in Orlando, and I believe Tampa's got them, but not where I live. So I only see them on the road anyway. So I don't really
when I
know
was in
where
college,
exactly they are.
When I was at school in Arizona, there was a Payway on University Avenue, which is the main drag of restaurants
right.
and bars going onto campus. And I used to eat there all the time because it was a 3-minute walk from the newsroom. So I used to go there all the time, but as an adult, not so much because it's just kind of not that many locations. Okay, I think this is when my list is going to start blowing people's heads away, you know.
Okay.
People are going to start rolling their eyes and they're going to be like, this guy's a psychopath.
I'm ready.
My number two. Is Outback Steakhouse Kookaburra wings.
They're not bad. Those are pretty good wings.
Probably go as far to say that they are my favorite wings on the face of the earth.
I mean,
they are delicious.
I don't have a problem with that. My favorite restaurant wing, like chain restaurant wings at the moment, are the ones at Tijuana Flats, which is a burrito chain in Florida. They started making wings randomly a couple months ago, and they're really good at it. So I don't begrudge you this one. I've had Outback Kookaburra wings, and they're pretty good.
I think they're seasoned perfectly. They're not breaded, so they're still very caloric. And that's the thing that I love about Cheesecake
They still can kill me, so they're perfect.
Yeah. Well, Cheesecake Factory has, and I meant to say this when I got to my mac and cheese bites, but Cheesecake Factory has somehow managed to only have 2,500 calorie plus entrees. And like their hamburger, if you go look at the nutrition facts, how do you make a 2,500 calorie hamburger? How?
It is difficult. You have to like inject fat into it. I think that's the
even
only
if it's.
Way.
But what do you have to like cook it in butter? Soak the bun in butter. Even then, 2,500 calories.
My favorite is like the 1,700 calorie salads at yeah. Cheesecake.
Have you ever looked at the nutrition facts at these like these Chili's and Applebee's?
Oh yeah.
It's like, oh, terrible. You want buffalo chicken strips? 2,600 calories. How? I could have four McDonald's full meals for less calories than that. It's insanity. But I do think that they are seasoned perfectly. The texture is amazing. The spicy ones are just spicy enough to give you a pop, but not enough to make you sweat. If I could have any buffalo wing ever, I think I would be this. So
and you're gonna cool it down with some nice brown bread.
Yeah, and I'm gonna take it for a swim in some some blue cheese.
There you go. All right, number two for me. This chain I think is only in the South, but there's a similar dish at a national chain too. So Miller's Ale House, which I think is mostly in the
Columbus.
South. I think they go up. Yeah, they go up the Eastern Seaboard and into the Midwest. The chicken nachos at Ale House. When I was in college, for $7.95, you could order the chicken nachos, and they feed four. Like, we would have contests to see. Somebody would say, "Oh, I could eat a whole chicken nachos at Ale House," and we'd be like, "Yeah, okay, let's put some money on that." And no one ever did because they are like the plate is as big as the table, and they grow as you eat them.
I've never had those, and I don't know why because I very much like. Nachos, but I never order nachos in restaurants ever. And part of the reason why is because I don't think that people have the ratio down the right way. There's only like 10 nucleus chips, you know, the ones that have everything on it and hold the whole thing together.
Nucleus?
Nucleus. What did I say?
That's what you said. Nucleus. What? It's,
nucleus.
I'm gonna spell a word for you. Nuclear. What?
Nucleus.
How do you pronounce that word? Okay. Nucleus.
Is that right? Nucleus. Nucleus.
Nucleus.
Nucleus.
Nuclear. It's not nuclear.
Wait, so what did I say and what is the right way?
Nucleus is correct. You said
what
nucleus.
What did I say?
Nucleus.
Nucleus. Wait. I'm like, I can't hear the difference. Nucleus.
That's wrong. Nucleus.
Nucleus. Yeah, you get it, man. Come on, give me a break.
Nuclear nucleus.
Nucleus. Nucleus. I can't say that word, man.
We're going to hit him with a nuclear missile.
Nucleus chip. I think that's wrong again.
It is.
But keep you know what I'm
keep
saying.
Keep going. I'm not going to stop you again.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that word, and it's just fine. It's also like the same thing where there are certain words that I don't know how to spell no matter what. I can't spell restaurant.
I can't spell rhythm.
Everybody has like words effort. That they can't spell. Yeah. Rhythm, I got. I don't think I can. Restaurant.
My daughter pronounced restaurant until she was about seven.
Does she say nucleus?
Nope. She's got that perfectly down. Like she when she's talking about a cell, she talks about the nucleus of the cell.
Nucleus is correct.
That's correct.
And I said nucleus?
That's what you said.
Okay. I meant to say nucleus because a lot of these nachos are dry. they're not, there's like 10 good bites and the rest of the tray is trash at a lot of places that don't do it right. So I feel like it's gotta be a place that, you know, hits it on the money. And because I'm always so afraid of misordering, there's no worse feeling in the world than
the Ale House is more of a sentimental thing for me. They're not necessarily what I'd call good, but they're what I call plentiful. And when you don't have a lot of money, or you would like to divert more of your money toward beer, they're a very satisfying dish to have with your beer while you're watching NFL games on a Sunday, if you're a broke college kid. So that's why they're so high up on the list for me, because they got me through a lot.
Listen.
And I appreciate that.
What was your college like? At school, did you have what was your main dining situation?
I mean,
did you have one in your dorm?
Well, I was only in the dorm for a year, and then I was in an apartment. So it was, I made stuff at home.
But when you were on campus, though, did you have a
dining
card?
Hall. Yeah, there's a dining hall, and I had a declining balance card, which you could use at the Wendy's or the Chick-fil-A or KFC okay. on campus.
Because at Arizona, and I don't know what it's like now, but my dorm didn't have a dining hall in the dorm.
We didn't have one in the dorm. We had a dining hall in front for the, you know, the clusters of dorms right there.
We had to walk to, basically, I ate every meal my freshman year in a mall food court.
That sounds about right.
There was a Papa John's, there was a McDonald's, there was a Chick-fil-A, and an Asian place and a salad place, and it was like a mall food court. Do you know how many Filet-O-Fishes my parents bought me when I was in college? And part of the reason I gained so much weight my freshman year?
You pulled a Ron Swanson. You said,
I'm thinking bring
me a lot of Filet-O-Fishes, but what I'm really saying is bring me all the Filet-O-Fishes you have.
I never had the feeling of broke college student because I had the meal card my whole time. And the meal card was always
had parents putting money on the meal card. Like my meal card, the scholarship pushed into the meal card, and when it was out, it was out. Now, I will tell you, there was a declining balance feature because they were trying to get more people to buy the meal plan. So my freshman year, they gave you a bonus $500 declining balance if you bought a meal plan. And so I did buy the meal plan. And so I used the declining balance when we go to Subway or when we go to Wendy's at the student union. And the last night of the semester, because the bonus stuff was if you don't use it, you lose it. The last night of the semester, I had like $30 left on my declining balance. And so I walked into Wendy's and I'm like,
let's go.
Give me three of those and four of those. We're running this sucker out.
Willie Tuitama. Do people know who that is?
I do.
Does an average college football fan know who he is? He lived in my dorm freshman year. And it wasn't, and he got the starting job, and there was a big party in my dorm the night that he got the starting job as a true freshman. But I remember that night, and I don't know, because you were a walk-on, so I don't know if you had different rules for that card than the scholarship players did, but the scholarship players at Arizona used to walk into the dining halls, and it would tell you whenever you swiped it,
mm-hmm.
for a regular student like me, how much was left.
Right.
But when a college football player who was on scholarship swiped it, it said UNL.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have
unlimited.
That. Mine was quite limited.
When you made friends with people on the football team, I remember one night, I can't remember what player it was, but he was swiping his card for everybody. Everybody was getting everything they wanted, and he was just like, whoo, swoosh, swoosh, and people were just running through the line. People were adding Hostess cupcakes, and I got to say, that was the closest thing to feeling what Christmas is like as a child, because that was – it was just like everything. We stocked up our whole dorm room because he was swiping his card. Okay, my number one?
Yes, I'm ready.
This one is going to be nuclear.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Domino's cheesy bread.
Listen, I'm not gonna crush you on this. My daughter gets the Domino when we order Domino's, which we do frequently because we have children. She gets the Parmesan twists and loves them. She dips them in buffalo sauce instead of marinara, but they're great.
Do you ever eat the cheese bread? I'm sure it's good.
Yeah, I've had it before. It's very good.
I was at a very expensive steakhouse with my fiance, and it was a celebration for somebody's birthday, and we got into a discussion at the table as they were putting down the breads and the steaks, and we're talking like $150 for two people to eat there cheaply. Very nice place called Nick and Sam's, and we got into the discussion about bread, and I said to myself, and I made this point at the dinner table, and people were looking at me like I was an alien. I said, if you took Domino's cheese bread and you didn't tell anybody that it was from Domino's and they put it on a plate and they cut it up evenly so that people could put a toothpick or a fork in there and they ate it, people would say it is the most delicious thing they've ever eaten in their entire life. But because it's from Domino's, everybody will look at you and go, oh, God, that's disgusting. Why would you put Domino's number? Domino's cheesy bread is the most elite appetizer on the face of the planet.
I don't know if that's true.
In my mind,
it's
it is.
Good.
It is.
It's very good, but
I order cheesy bread without pizza.
Sober?
Yes.
Okay.
My shame eating usually happens when sober, which is the problem. But I'm telling you, and if you haven't had it for a long time, you just worked out, you got a sick tank top on, I can tell you were running or something, you earned it. Just get a cheesy bread delivered to your house with garlic sauce and then call me in the morning. After you're done smoking your post-meal cigarette.
Now I'm going to have to order cheesy bread the next time we order Domino's because, again,
I swear to you, man, it is amazing.
Our kids are in the age wheelhouse. We order a lot of Domino's in our house. So
we talk a lot about this with because we booked a wedding venue this past week, which I'm surprised I didn't bring up sooner. But we're
excited about Domino's catering.
And this is the point. We're talking what would you like? Would you like an Italian buffet? Would you want steak, prime rib, chicken, fish? You know, the same bull crap that they give you at every wedding.
Fish?
You get and I said to myself, if you put 50 boxes of Domino's cheese bread on the back table and you took them out of the box and nobody knew they were for Domino's, I guarantee you that would be the number one eaten thing at my wedding.
Ari's wedding is going to be a five-year-old's birthday party. It's going to be awesome. You're going to have a ball pit too?
You're making fun of me. You don't think that if
bounce house?
Let me ask you this. If you went to a wedding and the wedding said chicken, fish, or steak.
Domino's.
And it was the normal
that's
one,
what
right?
I'd check.
And then wedding, yeah. That's wedding A. Wedding fish, whatever. And that's what, $5,000 to feed 75 people?
Yeah, and the food's not that good.
Yeah, it's always cold. You want to talk about never getting it right with cheese sticks? Have you ever had a really delicious wedding meal?
No.
Everybody stands in the back waiting for the late night French fries or corn dogs or chicken sliders, whatever that's what everybody wants. So wedding A is traditional wedding fare. Mm-hmm. Wedding B is an In-N-Out truck, Domino's cheesy bread, pizza bagels, French fries, and hot pretzels. Which wedding do you want to go to?
Wedding B. Listen, I'd go to a wedding that was entirely catered by Domino's. It will generally be better than any of the banquet hall food you're going to have.
It's not even you would go, you would prefer it. People prefer this stuff.
Yes.
And it's 1/100th of the price. And now
you're not going to get the snobbery from me on this, Ari. I am on your side on this one.
Yeah, and I'm trying to explain to her. I just said, why don't we just get an In-N-Out truck?
Can you do that?
In-N-Out catering truck. Yeah. And that would never happen because it's a nice wedding and everybody's got to come and we got to dress up.
But it'd be a nicer wedding if you had an In-N-Out truck.
And I try to tell her, I know you've got all your workout friends and everybody who goes to spin class and all your, you know, people who want a nice wedding.
You know what all those people want, Ari?
In-N-Out and really French fries.
Yeah. And
Domino's
pizza.
Cheesy bread. Yeah.
Gooey.
Could you imagine if you just did a pizza by the slice for your wedding and that was it?
Oh, it'd be tremendous.
Would anybody be upset? Everybody wins. Everybody gets what they want to eat, and you get to pay 1/10 the price of how much it costs to cater a wedding
with mediocre Italian
buffet.
I'd be all for it. Because, the food at my wedding was decidedly average and extremely expensive.
Really expensive, and no one liked it. And remember,
nothing creative, yeah. No, not one person remembers anything they ate at that wedding. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it's probably booze or food that costs the most?
Booze? By far, yes.
Because we got the breakdown, and I tried to block it out.
Spend on the booze and bring a bunch of donuts. People would be happy. You're right. Okay, so my number one. So this is, I'll take you back to my freshman year in college. The fraternity houses to entice people to come to rush events will put out appetizer spreads from various chain restaurants. And so I would go to whatever fraternity house was doing the Outback spread that night so I could get cheese fries. And so my number one is Outback cheese fries. So I nearly got duped into joining like two different fraternities my freshman year just because I was trying to eat cheese fries. And they're like, hey, come on upstairs and all the join the brotherhood. And I'm like, I'm just here for the cheese fries, guys. You put out a giant tray of cheese fries in front of your house.
Two things. One, my freshman year of college, Rush started and ended, and I didn't realize it was happening. So like everybody was in a fraternity. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like I missed. There were, I don't know where Ari, I was.
There were free appetizers on the sidewalks. It was. I
went to a few parties. They had beer pong tournaments and stuff to try to get you to rush. But I don't ever remember any significant moment in my life where I'm like, well, what 9 fraternities am I going to rush and which ones am I going to pick? I never went through Rush. I don't know why it missed me. And two, what would the odds have been if you would have asked Vegas to set an odds of best appetizers of all time and two were going to be represented by Outback and none of them were going to be Bloomin' Onion?
I don't like onion rings. I don't like onions. So I don't like onion rings.
It's funny, but I think it also speaks to the quality of Outback. You could smash in there, and they've got a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. No, Outback's fantastic. Also, if I was more of an onion ring person, the onion ring tower at Red Robin is very
that was almost on my list.
Yeah, it's very impressive. But I just love the Outback cheese fries. I think the choice of cheeses, the way they melt it, the bacon, and the thick cut steak fries. It is the perfect ratio of everything. And here's the hack: if you don't want to eat 3,000 calories worth of cheese fries before you get your meal, you make fries your side, and they will turn them into cheese fries for an extra buck.
Who doesn't want to eat enough cheese fries before their meal to feel? Oh, I don't think I've ever walked out of an Outback Steakhouse with my button on my jeans still intact.
Yeah, so sometimes I feel guilty. That's the only thing. But no, I love like a big tray of cheese fries. I'm a big poutine guy. You know, there's not really any big chain that has a good poutine, but there's a ton of good poutine appetizers out there now. It was kind of the hot appetizer of 2019, so everybody's got it, you know, in every town.
I had poutine for the first time. I didn't know what poutine was until like 2014, and I had it in Toronto, and I thought it was good.
Yeah,
I think it's a little much for a meal.
How do you?
It's a little much for a meal. People in Canada eat it for a meal, don't they?
Well, it is. It can be a meal, but I think it's an appetizer, and then you eat your meal. There's a barbecue place in Jacksonville called the Bearded Pig that does country sausage gravy poutine over those fries with pulled pork, and then you can eat like a beef rib. It's the greatest thing ever. It's just, but
what city was that in? Jacksonville?
It's in Jacksonville, Florida. So, but the Outback cheese fries, that's my happy place. Kind of, it has enough calories and cholesterol and saturated fat to kill you. Like it checks all the boxes, and the ratios for me are perfect.
Without exaggeration, I think that the Blooming Onion is the worst possible thing a human being can put in their body food wise, calorically. Isn't it like 3,600 calories for the Blooming Onion?
I don't know. I think
it's the worst thing for you on the history of any menu.
When I was looking up all these, like, so the factory nachos at Cheesecake Factory are very similar to the Ale House nachos I was talking about. They're 3,000 calories for that dish. And
like, how is it 3,000
calories in one dish? I'll have to look up the Bloomin'. I didn't know the Bloomin' Onion had that many calories.
The Bloomin' Onion has 1,954 calories in it.
Okay.
And it has 146 grams of fat and 145 carbs, and it's an onion.
Yeah, someone managed to take something that has
zero,
no calories whatsoever, and give it 2,000 calories and 146 grams of fat.
Yeah, I don't know how these chain restaurants manage to turn things into 2,000 calories, but I'm not against it.
Here's the Outback cheese fries. By the way, 1,770 calories, 117 grams of fat, 124 grams of carbs. Oh, that is horrific. There is 3,240 milligrams of sodium in one order of cheese fries.
Is sodium bad for you?
In that amount? Yeah, very.
Because everybody else was like, there's too much sodium in that. I'm like, sodium is the least of my concerns.
51 grams of the 117 grams of fat are saturated fat.
My entire life is saturated fat.
So, but you know what? When I'm in there, there are no rules. And it is just right. So I don't really care.
Just like the podcast. No rules, just right.
That's right. You know what happens? I get there, I order that thing, and I say, I'm going nuclear on these cheese fries.
Nucleus.
Nucleus.
Nucleus is what I said. Nucleus is wrong. Nucleus is right.
Nucleus, yes.
Nucleus.
Think of Miss Cleo.
Yeah, okay.
She tells your future.
I'll try to get that down by next week.
You'll be tested on it.